Utah has just completed a remarkable midterm election with some very close races for candidates and a number of ballot initiatives that drew strong interest. This election challenges what had been a long-term trend of declining voter participation documented by Utah Foundation research. Utah is a unique place for politics, and nobody knows that better than Adam Brown, Associate Professor of Political Science at Brigham Young University. We'll hear from Professor Brown on this edition of Utah Thrives, and we'll talk about how the election picture in Utah is changing. This is Utah Thrives, the Utah Foundation podcast. I'm Dan Bomas. A recent research brief published by Utah Foundation shows Utah's voter participation rate dropping below 30% in the 2014 midterm election. This year, it's expected to be well over 70% statewide. At least one competitive congressional race is among the reasons why, but strong interest in ballot propositions was another. These voters spoke to Doug Wright on KSLTV's Sunday edition.
The marijuana proposition, I have family members that are in chronic pain.
Okay.
And I'm very conservative in my lifestyle and conservative in my views, but at the same time, because I'm a social worker, I have to be liberal and open-minded and kind of have a fair balance and really look at the big picture that our people are suffering and they really need some relief. And opiates is not the answer. It's just not. It's so addictive.
Well, very quickly, go to Katie for you.
Redistricting.
Yeah. You may have hit one of my hot buttons on that one. Tim, how about you?
I would say, well, actually all of them. Redistricting is a big one. The marijuana issue is big. I have a lot of people in my family, people that I know who suffer, again, the chronic pain. That's hard to watch and not have relief from that. You know, and I've done studies on opioids and just the dangers of addiction. So those are big.
Carolyn, for you.
Prop 2 is definitely a big one, especially for people my age.
Yeah.
But recent elections have reversed the downward trend of voter participation. Justin Lee, the director of elections in the office of Utah's lieutenant governor, told Utah Foundation one reason is the choice by most counties in Utah to conduct the vote by mail.
We see it, with municipal races, with county races, you know, wherever it may be, competitive races, and vote by mail. We've seen every county that's gone vote by mail increase their turnout. In 2016, every county that was vote by mail had higher turnout than counties that were not vote by mail. And, you know, with only two counties not being vote by mail this year, I would imagine the trend will be very close, that the Emory and Carbon County will be down there at the bottom of the turnout list. You know, we've actually had more people cast ballots this year by mail than we had people vote, period, in any previous midterm election.
Vote by mail was instituted in part because of concerns over election security. While there are still worries about non-citizens voting or voters casting multiple ballots, Lee says new systems are helping to prevent fraud.
We have a statewide voter registration database, which allows us to do something systemically, like I said, getting things from vital records, getting things from Social Security. We know if people are passing away and are able to clean those off the voter rolls very easily. So we've got things in place that you wouldn't have had previously. We also are a part of a few different things. We're part of a statewide consortium of states, and we share data back and forth. So if someone goes in and requests a driver's license in Colorado, for example, that will ping our system and say, hey, it looks like you've got a voter. They've requested a driver's license in Colorado. That then allows our counties to reach out to them and say, have you moved? If so, you know, allow us to clean you off the voter rolls. Mm-hmm. So we've got a lot more systems in place. We have, you know, data sharing is so much easier than it used to be, you know, across county lines and across state lines to make sure that the rolls are cleaner.
With the election over, the focus turns now to what will happen next in Utah's legislature with ballot propositions, new leadership, and a strong economy. Adam Brown is an associate professor of political science at Brigham Young University. He has collected his observations of Utah's politics and statehood in a new book, Utah Politics and Government, American Democracy Among a Unique Electorate. Utah Foundation invited him to speak to its annual luncheon in October. Professor Brown argues that many young people in our state aren't thinking much about politics, but when they do, he says it's life-changing, and it's worth the effort. Here's what he had to say.
And thank you to the Utah Foundation for letting me come and talk while you eat today. It's
It's a privilege and an honor. I recognize the great work that Utah Foundation does, and I've learned a great deal reading their reports over the years, so I appreciate being here. It's also humbling to recognize the crowd I'm addressing and sitting next to the former Chief Justice and others in this room who have been neck deep in Utah politics for many years. And it makes me wonder whether I really have anything to tell you, but I'll try to not waste your time anyhow. Usually the crowd that I'm teaching at BYU are students who are bright students, but who don't know nearly as much as they think they do about politics and government. And most of them have never stepped foot in the government building. And so when I offer this semester, I've been offering extra credit to my freshmen if they go to a Provo or Orem City Council meeting or a county commission meeting. And invariably, they come back amazed at their first experience at watching one of these. They come back amazed that anybody could care so much about a zoning variance. But the best thing I get to do is I get to send each winter interns to the Utah legislature. And if you know the legislature, you know that as much as our elected officials work, the interns run the place. And these interns come back. They call it life-changing. I give them an anonymous program evaluation, and they call it life-changing over and over. It's life-changing then to realize that the people holding elected office and lobbying and the activists, that they're all normal people like them. And it's life-changing for them to realize how much policy is coming out of the state and its local governments and not out of Washington. And it's life-changing for them to realize how much can be done by a small group of dedicated individuals up there. The trouble is that that life-changing experience reaches so few people. We're a state of 3 million people. And so I've got a lot I would love to tell you from the book I did, but I'm going to pick on one point. I'm going to pick on why Utah is worth it. Why it's worth it to those 3 million people to know how much is happening there. And I'm going to develop that through 3 points. And here's the first one. We misdirect our political attention. There's my first point. We misdirect our political attention in this state. People think the national government does more than it does, and they think the state government does less than it does. And I've got lots of data on this. I'll show you one thing. I did a survey of Utah voters a few years back, and I asked them just some simple factual questions to get a sense of how much do they even know about the federal and state governments. I'll show you four of the questions to get you a flavor for this. Here was the first one. They're going to show Utahns are paying more attention to federal than Utah. The first question was, can you name the vice president of the United States? And then, can you name the Utah lieutenant governor? And a huge drop-off, right? 9 and 10 claim the vice president, but only 6 and 10 get lieutenant governor. Well, how about the Speaker of the U.S. House and then the Speaker of the Utah House of Representatives? And of course, both are worse, but a giant drop-off. Well, how about the U.S. Senate Majority Leader and then the Senate President from the Utah State Senate? A giant drop-off. Well, then I threw one little softball, maybe. I said, can you at least tell me how long a U.S. senator serves and how long a Utah senator serves? 6 and 4 years, the two answers, and it was not quite as big of a gap. It's worse than it looks. These weren't open-ended questions. They were multiple choice. When I asked, can you name the Utah Senate president, the lowest one there, I had shown them four names of actual Utah state senators and just said, can you pick out the one who's the Senate president? 25% is what you would get from guessing. The implication here is that like 6% knew the answer. Now, maybe this is all correct. Maybe they should be paying more attention to national politics, but now I'm going to persuade you they're wrong to put their attention there, that we are misdirecting our attention. First, I'll show you how much law comes out of the legislature. That blue line for each biennium is how many bills and resolutions the Utah legislature passes. Over your typical two-year period, you're getting 800 to 900. Well, here's Congress down here. For the first decade of this century, it was typically twice as many coming out of the Utah legislature as out of Congress, and has gone up to about 3 times as many. The median state has stayed the same. We've just gotten more active. It's our state and local governments that are running our public schools and our public universities, our police departments and our fire departments and our first responders. It's our state and local governments giving us libraries and parks and recreation that's administering Medicaid and other social programs. It's our state and local governments that are providing us with infrastructure, highways and airports and public transit and electricity and sewage and water and garbage service. This is who is doing land use planning for growth and zoning. This is who's doing all the licensing of all the professions, the pharmacists and the physicians and the contractors and the hairstylists and the hair braiders and all the other ones, the speech pathologists. So we're misdirecting our attention in Utah. We know more about the federal government. I also asked on that survey, which one influences your life more? Only 18% picked the state. About a third said, I don't know, we're picking the same. And the rest said the federal government. Sure, if you're on Medicaid or Medicare, that's probably true. Or if you're ranching on public lands, that's probably true. But for most of it, it's probably not. We're overlooking all these things the state and local governments are doing. All right, point two. Because we misdirect our attention, we're disengaged. Because we think it doesn't matter. Now, the most obvious metric is this first one, voting. This is not showing Utah's voter turnout rate. This is showing the turnout rate in Utah after subtracting the U.S. average rate, meaning zero is a year where our turnout matched the national average. And positive means we were above average in Utah. And if you look from the 60s to the 80s, we were an above average voting state. And then we became an average state. And then we've become a below average state. Well, why did that happen? Well, from the Depression until the 70s, we were a swing state. From the Depression till the 70s, we voted for every winning presidential candidate of either party except for one. And then we became a Republican state. And as voters realized that our electoral votes in Utah were foregone, because they're so focused on national and not state politics, they thought our elections didn't matter anymore. And so lagging about a decade behind the partisan shift is the turnout drop. And we quit voting because we think state and local politics don't matter. Here's point number two. We misdirect our political attention in the state, and because we do that, we're disengaged, because we think it doesn't matter. When I get back to the title, if I'm skidding to my final point, Utah's worth it. It's worth directing our attention back. And so first I'll show you some things that make it worth it, some things that we should want Utahns to know, some things that we're actually doing really well, better than maybe the federal government, and things that maybe we could export and improve the way we do things at the federal level or in other states if we were paying attention enough to know it. Here's one thing. One thing we do really well is our office holders take their job seriously. I get to meet some office holders in the course of my work, and I have had many of them cast votes I've disagreed with, but that isn't the point. The point is that I invariably find they're serving for the right reasons. And they take it seriously. And they want to understand what they're deliberating, and they want to do a good job. And they want to do what's right for Utah, even if their vision of that may differ from mine and from yours. And one way you see that is if you look, for example, at the legislature. Our Democrats and Republicans talk to each other. Pause and reflect on that for a moment. This is a chamber where for the last several years, Republicans have held more than 80% of the seats in the House and in the Senate. And in the U.S. Congress, your expectation if you're a minority member is that you will never get a bill heard in front of a committee or voted on the floor. Only the majority party gets to do that. Well, what do? You've only got a seventh of the seats right now for the minority party, and yet ideas from both parties get heard. This is the red line here from 2007, 2017, is the percentage of bills sponsored by Republicans that pass. Typically 60 to 70%. But here's the percentage sponsored by Democrats. The last few years, they've gotten more than half their bills passed. I know it's not a random selection of bills. The more left-leaning bills are not going to get through the legislature, but they're going to get a hearing. They're going to get considered because they're going to consider all the ideas. And you can look at our courts. We just had these very contentious confirmation hearings for Brett Kavanaugh. And his were unusually contentious, but they're always contentious. So contentious that it becomes a major feature of our presidential campaigns. Who are you going to appoint to the court? When's the last time in a gubernatorial campaign you heard that concern? Because we found a way to promote fairness and expertise over ideology on our courts. And what's the result of that? Here's one result of that. Unanimous rulings are more common in the Utah Supreme Court than in the U.S. Supreme Court. So there it is, from 1997 for 15 years going forward, the percentage of cases the Utah Supreme Court handed down, above 90 typically, that are unanimous. U.S. Supreme Court is 30-40%. Now you're thinking, well, obviously, these are judges appointed by Republican governors hearing bills passed by Republican legislature and signed by Republican governors. Of course it's unanimous. No, you're wrong if you think that. Because for the first few years of this chart, here's the partisan breakdown. It was a 4-1 Democratic court for the first few years in this chart, hearing bills from a Republican legislature signed by a Republican governor, and you still saw the consensus. And then there was a partisan transition where it was a 3-2 majority, and you still, if you were ever gonna have a time of ideological conflict on the court, that should have been it, but it didn't happen. And it's maintained that level of agreement because we have a system that promotes expertise and fairness over ideological conflict. And in part, that system is our merit-based appointment system that gives us all those retention elections we see on the ballot that many voters have no clue what that's about. They think that these are judicial elections, and they're not. It's a different thing. And it's a system more than half the states have adopted. And yet no one even thinks of whether that might benefit us at the federal level to improve not only our US Supreme Court, but the way you have presidential elections that get so focused on judicial nominees. Utah's worth it. There's another thing we do right. In part, we get so much consensus, too, because we maintain our Constitution. So Thomas Jefferson wasn't at the Federal Convention in 1787. He was minister to France at the time. But when he got a copy of it, he praised it. He said, this was written by an assembly of demigods. But then he warned that if we didn't keep that thing current, we were going to pay the price later. We had to amend it. He thought we had to replace it every generation. That may have been a little extreme. He thought every 19 years we need to have a new convention. That may have been a little much. But he warned that if we didn't update it, we'd have a problem. In my lifetime, we've amended the U.S. Constitution once, and there are issues that we should address. We might not all agree on what they are, but there are some issues. Well, how about the Utah Constitution? My grandfather's grandfather in 1895 was a delegate and helped write that thing. He wouldn't recognize it today because we take care of it. This is for every 30-year bin in the first 120 years of that Constitution, so 1896 to 2015, how many amendments did the Utah legislature send to voters, and how many did the voters actually approve? And you can see as time goes by, we have continued to update that thing. As of the end of this series, we had amended it 118 times. That's a lot. And the legislature had sent out about 180-something to it. Now, we can quibble on whether that's too much or too few. That isn't the point. The point is that by taking care of it, we've also promoted judicial expertise and judicial fairness, because we, the people, are dealing with the problems instead of punting it to the courts to decide for us the tricky issues, because that's not their job. Well, here's the fun thing. Despite this, and even though this year there are amendments on your ballot the voters will vote on, I did a little survey a couple years ago, and I asked Utahns, does Utah have a constitution? And I didn't phrase it as does Utah, because I was copying a survey question that had been asked in other states. So I phrased it neutrally, but it was only to Utah respondents. It said, off the top of your head, do you happen to know whether your state has its own constitution? 40% said yes. Very few said no. Most said, I have no idea. And that brings me back to this point. Utah's worth it. If you don't know we have a constitution, you have no idea what federalism is. How can you appreciate what a state does and why we have federalism if you don't know that a constitution exists that grants from the people through an act of popular sovereignty authority to their government? Utah's worth it. Now, why do we not know this? There's a lot of reasons. There's a lot of reasons that we misdirect our political attention. There's a lot of reasons that we aren't as engaged as we could be. One reason that's totally in the control of our state is that we choose not to even teach that our state is there. Think about your schooling, or if you have kids in school, think about their schooling. You learn about the national founding and the national government in fifth grade and in junior high and in high school. And if you go to a public university or, frankly, any private university, you're also going to take 3 credits of general education coursework on the American founding and government. I teach that class. Political Science 110, American government. But at what point do we teach Utah government in history? You get fleeting attention to it in fourth grade, and that's about it. So Utah's worth it. It is worth it for Utahns to know how much their state and local governments do. It is worth it for Utahns to know as much about their state and local government as they know about their national government. It is worth it for Utahns to participate and to vote in the elections past president and Congress, and to have some inkling of who those people are on the ballot below those top races. It is worth it for Utahns to understand their history and to know how their government is structured and how that structure sometimes differs from the federal structure, like our merit appointment plan for our Supreme Court. It is worth it for Utahns to know we have a constitution. I guess that's all I have for you today. Thank you for your attention and for the opportunity to speak to you and rant to you about Utah.
That's Brigham Young University political science professor Adam Brown speaking to Utah Foundation's annual luncheon, October 24th, 2018. Utah Foundation is a nonpartisan, nonprofit research group funded by business, philanthropic foundations, higher education, local government, and individual donations. Founded in 1945, our mission is to produce objective, thorough, and well-reasoned research and analysis that promotes the effective use of public resources, a thriving economy, a well-prepared workforce, and a high quality of life for Utahns. Utah Foundation seeks to help decision makers and citizens understand and address complex issues. Utah Foundation also offers constructive guidance to improve governmental policies, programs, and structures. I'm Dan Bomas. Thanks for listening.